You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, walking this road as always together. We are into my declared Week of the Child. This is something that is near and dear to my heart. It should be near and dear to everyone's heart, whether you have children, don't have children, are going to have children, have grandchildren, or once was a child yourself. Because what is going on with our children should, in some respects, at the very least, have you scratching your head and probably have you maybe a little outraged. If nothing else, whether we don't know the whole story or not, we don't know what's real, what isn't real, what's true, what isn't true, what's hype, what isn't hype. And our children hang in the balance. Never before, all of a sudden, we have these surging numbers for autism and mental illness diagnosed in two-year-olds and three-year-olds, ADHD rampant. I mean, that is just rampant. So either something and some combination environmentally, any way you want, just look, we have no way of knowing. How do you assess? You can correlate. Correlation's a good thing. Correlation's a very good thing. And it causes you to ask questions. So in the last, decade? We have the surgeons. In the last decade, we also have an explosion of screen time, internet, all the different, I mean, I can't even speak. Listen to me. I can't speak. This stuff is just bombarding. It bombards my brain. And we can only think of so many things. You see what happens? I just sputter out a bunch of nonsensical syllables. Because we have this situation occurring where we can't, it's a runaway train. We can't understand or decide what is what influences what. So let's just take one little tiny thought and discussion. So we all have our coffee, we're all hanging out, and everyone's saying, well, I think it's nutrition, and I think it's too many carbs, and I think it's sedentariness, and I think it's broken marriages, and I think it's a lack of morality. I think that it is, we have too much screen time. We have too many telephones. Well, are too many cell phones, too much texting, too many videos, too many TVs. Well, and what happened? Well, I think that's it. But no, I think we got to look even further. Let's look even further and see that maybe it's all the different airwaves and different kinds of frequency and airwaves and chemtrails and things that we're breathing in. The quickest way to anesthetize you is to have you breathe in the whatever's going to knock you out, breathing or IV. So we're breathing in all kinds of stuff. Maybe it's certain other kinds of chemicals from other reasons. Maybe it's all the water bottles. I mean, really, where are we going to stop? And I'm just giving you what a bunch of people without any particular expertise would be saying around a table at a coffee house. Everyone would have an opinion. And they aren't, it's not mutually exclusive. Their opinions are not mutually exclusive. It can be a little bit of all. It could be none. It's completely confusing. But when you look at the sweet, little, beautiful life that bounces on your knee and runs up and bounces and hugs you and kisses you or doesn't hug you and kisses you or is always fussing or is causing you disconcern, what are you going to do? The only thing you can do, number one, is realize you're not ever going to have a clear answer. And even with the most awesome, well-intentioned medical personnel, spiritual personnel, educational personnel, we are all a product of our culture. And we're going to want to do the right thing. And we're going to want to believe what we believe in. So on this week of the child, I'm really honing in on things like diagnoses early, preschool diagnoses of autism, of the ASD, the autistic spectrum disorder, ADHD, bipolar, different things that are diagnosed very young before the brain has had a chance to reach some kind of a homeostasis, which it really, I mean, it does. But we're talking about developmental, as we talked about yesterday, asynchronous development. Now, if you missed yesterday, please log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com and look at yesterday's podcast that where I give you the link that defines and talks about asynchronous development. It's a very, very eye-opening and exciting concept that as that starts to hopefully get a little bit more attention, it's going to bring other things into balance. But we have a big caveat. I am never against medication. I am never against modern medicine. However, I am against it when it becomes the big push, when you have to medicate what was once normal. And when I say what was once normal, I mean for tried and true history. Such a high tolerance humanity had for all kinds of, talk about spectrum, for all kinds of human beings. We didn't have our prejudices, bias, our making fun of, our bullying, all that throughout millennia. But there was no other alternative. Maybe you got bullied. Maybe you got picked on. Maybe that developed certain things in characters. But never was it looked at until just recently that everything is a pathology with no norm to go by. What is the norm? How did the norm shift? We have very narrow windows. We have a very narrow window of normal. And it's getting more and more narrow. And that is very distressing. There was a period of time, only a few decades ago, where potty training, let's say, or when you learned your ABCs, it was a much wider range than now. And immediately there is a diagnosis. And we talk about people, children losing their diagnosis or outgrowing their diagnosis. Why do we talk about outgrowing a diagnosis? Why don't we wait for the child to grow and then assess? So why don't we give the window of time of human development, the plus and minus, barring really profound problems, zero eye contact, no interaction, inability to ambulate or walk or talk or make sounds, those kinds of things. And yes, it's on a range, and yes, it's on a spectrum, but we've gone overboard. And when you have a push where medicalization brings companies money, and it's no longer, hopefully the culture has outgrown the notion that it's the individual clinician who is profiting. Some are, yes, but this healthcare is a big system. Pharmacology is a big system. And the only way they can continue to grow and grow and expand and get richer and richer is by having utilization of their product. And if we start in infancy and we go all the way up to death, then that's going to be a guaranteed lifetime of pharmaceuticals. And our bodies are amazing, and we can filter and we can do what we do, but it's just, it's heartbreaking because there's a lot of things that parents know, but there are a lot of fears that parents have. Are they kidding themselves? Are they in denial? And yes, we oftentimes are in denial. We oftentimes are kidding ourselves, which is normal as well. Nobody wants to think that something is wrong with their children. So in this program, we're looking at questions. There's not going to be an all bad or an all good. It's not going to be get rid of this and embrace that, and or get rid of that and embrace this. I want you to ask questions. I want you to always be asking questions. I want you to be your own anthropologist in your household. I want you to be your own anthropologist is the best thing I can say. What? How do you tick? How does your children tick? How does your household tick? It's like, you know, Mary, Mary, quae quinturi, how does your garden grow? How does your garden grow? What is in your household? And I mean everything from when you wake up, is your child's bedroom? This is something people don't think about. In suburbia America, is your child's bedroom situated on the street such that they get light all night long from a street light or from a series of street lights? That can change their brain function. You must have dark when you sleep in order to have proper brain development and brain function. So there's everything from something as simple as that that we don't even think about to other things that we'll get into on the other side of the break. So grab your coffee and hopefully we'll make some sense of some of this stuff together. And I'm going to look a little bit more.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, and I'm getting just, you know, I get so riled up in so many ways because I've seen over decades and in the medical profession, outside the medical profession, in the psychiatric profession, I'm not a child psychiatrist, but you don't have to be a child psychiatrist to observe the world around you. You aren't. Maybe you are a child psychiatrist, but if you aren't a child psychiatrist, that you have observational skills. You also have gut feelings and you have knowledge inside your own household. One thing that I want to bring home to you is that your history, now if you're adopted and or your children are adopted, it can make a difference. It can bring up a little bit of area of blankness where there should be some information. It is so helpful to think back. And if you're a grandparent, to think back, how did your child develop? And sometimes we find ourselves in decades talking about the fun things or the little quirky things that our children did or our grandchildren did or our brothers or sisters did or that we were told that we did. And we repeat the same stories over and over because they're interesting, they're fun, they're cute, and everyone loves hearing them. And some people don't like hearing them, but we tell them. And sometimes other things fall into the wayside. So we do hopefully tend to remember the good and forget the bad. So what we can do is call on some of those past memories and think about it. Think about the things that you were worried about as a parent or that your parents tell you they were worried about with you? Were they worried ever because they thought you were never going to say that first word, or that you were never going to be potty trained, or that you threw tantrums too often, or you were too involved and you never paid attention to what they were saying? Maybe you were fiercely, fiercely independent. Maybe people used to comment that you were just chatty with everybody, or that you didn't chat at all. And these things tend to be endearing over time. Well, now those very things can be utilized to diagnose a developmental or mental problem that may or may not be there. So on the one hand, you want early diagnosis of anything that can be helped with the proper intervention and the proper therapies. But you also want to see, what in the world are we treating? What are we treating? What we tend to do, and what you tend to do, I know, is you come from your own household, and that tends to be your given. It doesn't dawn on you or me or the person that you're interacting with to actually really piece by piece, part by part, take apart your entire living situation, your entire physical plant, your nutritional stores, what you feed your children, when you feed them, how you feed them, what everyone's doing while you're eating, how they wake up, when they wake up, is it consistent, when they go to sleep, when are they tired, when are they energetic. As I was saying before the break, something as simple that we, 9 times out of 10 parents that I used to talk with in general practice, long before we had as much medicalization as we do now, and long before it was commonplace to medicate children, the childhood population at large, little things such as, what's the light condition like in your child's room? And I know there are a lot of neighborhoods, especially, well, everywhere, where that are built on cul-de-sacs, that are suburban neighborhoods. They have lots of street lights. It's great for kids playing outside. It's great going in and out of your own driveway. Helps you in the nighttime. It keeps things safe. And a lot of the bedroom windows face them. So you actually walk into a room, and the room is really pretty light. There are very inexpensive ways to deal with this, but the brain, the pineal gland, P-I-N-E-A-L, gland, in the brain is pretty much, it's a teeny tiny little gland. And that is, it's a gland. And it actually is, even in blind people, people who cannot see from birth, they have no ability to see anything. Their pineal gland is still working. And what it does is it picks up day and night, dusk and dawn, and it synchronizes your body, a circadian rhythm. A circadian rhythm is our natural rhythm. And before we had any electricity, that's one of the things that just worked in perfect sync with sleeping at night and waking up during the day. And it was safer that way, and it was better that way. And because if everybody was the proverbial night owl, we never would have been able to plant or harvest our food, would we? Because it would all be going on at night. So it's very important to really look at everything. So when we look at just something as small as I'm talking to you now about this, about the pineal gland, about the light and the circadian rhythm, go into your child's room. Go into your own room. Where do people, your elderly parents' room? Is the TV going all the time? Is there an alarm clock? Does the child fall asleep with their computer on and there's a blue glow from the screen, or does it go completely black? Is there one in a black room, blacked out room, one tiny light, that the kind of light you have on your adapter that you plug into your laptop, let's say, little tiny, tiny pinpoint green light can light up a room, and the pineal gland picks it up. It may not light up the room to where you can actually function in it, but you believe me, you walk into a dark room, you'll see that green light. These are all picked up, and they all are happening in your brain. They aren't walled off compartments that you buy at Walmart. They're living, breathing, interacting, constantly moving, constantly telling the body what to do. So when you sleep, all the different systems, your night shift goes on. And every part of a system that has a night shift, street workers, whatever that happens during the night, that keeps things afloat during the night. Your thermostats, everything, your brain has the same deal. It's telling your body it's time. It's time to call in the other. You guys go to sleep now and you turn off, and then I want all you other components to kick into gear now. It's time for your shift. And so you get the different kinds of filtering, the different kinds of lymph flow, the different kinds of neurological discharge, different things happening in your kidney. All these different things happen at night. You have certain cortisol levels. You all know, heard about cortisol. And a lot of times it's been reported in weight loss things because it's associated with belly fat, they say. And a lot of it comes from the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands have to do with your stress levels, whether they're just stress, meaning being able to get up and cough and breathe and walk and all that, or whether you're sleeping. So you have different needs. But if you're constantly on some kind of an alert because to your brain, it's light outside, you're going to be churning out these chemicals differently. You're going to have less ability for attention during the day. You may not appear sleepy, but you're not functioning, as they say. You're not running on all cylinders. So this is, you have to start with those simple things. Take an inventory of your child's room. Take an inventory of your room. Take an inventory of your house. Do you have a TV going in the living room that's attached to the kitchen? Do you have TVs and phones and laptops going on in the kitchen? Do you have another room upstairs with another television? Does each person have televisions going on, or computers going, streaming things, or Netflix going, or whatever you have, and then music all over the house? What in the world is happening? That's only part of it. As I said in the very beginning, because we're talking about childhood development, we're talking about a pure, unadulterated, teeming, bursting, excitable, neurological, brand new, not yet quite functioning system, not functioning as an adult, it's functioning as a newborn and as a two and three month old, as a toddler. But we can't crawl inside there and say, this is exactly what's harming, this is exactly what's helping. But what you can do is begin today to start looking. Do not assume that because the behavioral aspects that you're noticing are noticed and now they're diagnosed, perhaps the very thing you're diagnosing can be taken care of by changes in your own home and habits. So we're going to look into a little bit more of that on the other side of the break. And I want to go into the flip side, which is six things that you think you understand about gifted kids but don't. And you will see that sometimes the most gifted children are the most misunderstood and can be even given false diagnoses. All right, I am your host, Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and we're talking about children, and we're talking about medicalization of children and how that brings up so many questions. Never am I going to diagnose right now anyone that I'm not sitting in front of, and never am I going to be ironclad. I also want you to know that you really should take everything with just an air of wonder, a prayer for wisdom, a prayer for discernment, understanding, guidance, help. The Holy Spirit is all those things. Knowing that we all want to do what's best for our children and we all want to jump on it as quick as possible. So we don't want to delay either. People out there have real and true diagnosis and learning disabilities that used to go unseen and uncaught. And there are adults who really suffered from not having any understanding toward the disability that they had. And so they just thought they were labeled as inferior, stupid, not able, and it's too bad because many things that we learned over the years, we didn't know what dyslexia was at some point. We didn't know. We know now. We know to look for it. However, again, we tend to get so extreme. And everybody jumps on bandwagons, and pretty soon we have all these treatable diagnoses. And when you're talking about one in 63 children, and worldwide, I think it's one in 1,000 children are on the autistic spectrum. We're talking about the world. We're talking in the billions. That's just really hard for me to actually trust those numbers. But also, then we should be saying, what's wrong with the world? Why do we all of a sudden, did we just always have this malformed thing called humanity that was just waiting for tens of thousands of years to have medicine? I mean, something must be wrong. Either our judgment level is wrong, our parameters are in error or too narrow or aren't looking. We can look at any snapshot in time and talk about pathology. There are times when my life is so busy and I have so much going on and I've got my German Shepherd who sheds 24/7 and I have people and family members in different parts of the country that might have crises all at once that you'd do a snapshot of me and you could probably diagnose 1,000 things. And not the least of which is that I maybe have really bad housekeeping skills. And maybe I just, they could label all kinds of stuff from that. I'm not making light of diagnoses. I know lots of people and lots of wonderful adults who have been diagnosed with ADHD and they have been on medication for a good many years and they are quite happy and have been much happier since that moment. So I'm not saying this isn't real, but what I am saying is we need to call ourselves into question. I think that a lot of people can understand right now that they're, because it's older, medicalizing and medicating for this thing we call depression, that it's overutilized. And at exactly the same time, which sounds very paradoxical, we're finding more and more out about depression and hoping to catch it earlier and earlier. But we're not stopping depression. We have to ask ourselves that question as well. We're not, this is like a program of questions. We're not stopping depression. In fact, are we saying we're more depressed than ever? We're finding out all these things that we're more than ever. We have more now than ever of all these problems. So what could be the cure? What could be the answer? What could be the reason? It can't, we're never really given the reason. We're giving little bits and pieces. And at the same time, you're all sold the same thing. Well, it could be the screen time. It could be this. But yet, here's a world. Here's your world. Your world is that you can't be without that. You're dependent on it for your bills. You're dependent on it for your reminders. You're dependent on it for your calendars. You're dependent on it for communication. So, you know, it's kind of like that. There was an old commercial way back decades ago about a woman when it was on the 70s, I think, maybe it was 80s, of the woman who was supposed to be able to do it all, which we know now you can't. But she walks in her suit or whatever she had on, and she goes, the kids, the dogs, the house, the car, the husband, the work, the, she goes, what's a mother to do? It's like she just, and I think she had to go take a bath. I think it was Calgon commercial for bath salts. Go take a bath. I'm not positive that was the commercial. You can correct me if you know it, 5734BREAD4. But the concept was, it wasn't take a pill and then give all your kids pills and give your dog a pill. It was looking at modern life and then saying, you just need a new bath. Selling you something rather than saying, hey, let's look at, maybe that's the problem. Maybe we're creating a situation that is going to just engender more of the same. Let's look at a physical example. There was a time where middle class and lower middle class, lower socioeconomic, middle socioeconomic, would want a house. The houses they had certain yards in them. The yards were huge compared to what they are now in a lot of places in the country. Because a lot of people had 5, 6, 7 kids. And so that was just part and parcel for a reasonably priced home. Now we're used to living in little tiny spaces and little postage stamps. So you pay a premium for more land. So we have a whole different mindset now. So we crowd things in, and then we have to have play yards and things like that. So we don't even know what it's like. If we went to buy a house, we would be shocked at the size of a yard if it was spacious in a lot of parts of the country. Very small little yards, because people have less children. We can cram more into a neighborhood, more money for the developers. And again, we have different lifestyles. So this doesn't just come up from nothing. After a while, we're not going to be able to reinvent the wheel and go back and change it. We know for facts, if you look up, you just Google, in the early days before suburbia, as suburbia was coming in, it really was built around the gas station. Once the family started having the car, which now, you know, I mean, you can't even imagine a time without a car. But some of the grandparents and great-grandparents can, because they lived it. So there was no such thing. Well, then as it became more frequent, the neighborhoods and the development of neighborhoods literally were to help support cars and gas stations. It's what they did. So all this to say, this is just going on to show you the matrix, how these things are laid out in a fabric. I know it sounds like we're going all over the board, but it's the idea that these things are same song, different verse. If you can see it in one area, take that and extrapolate the pattern to your own area. This is what's important. This is why critical thinking is important. This is why we had such, in the early parts of our country, such a push for liberal arts education. And then my generation and other generations came up and said, wait a minute, we don't need all that. If I'm going to go into computer science, why do I need to learn about art? Why do I need to learn about Beethoven? I'm not interested in Beethoven. Well, the reason is because you get to, without you knowing it, and without your child knowing it, you get to see patterns of life. So when you're seeing it crop up in an area that seems disassociated from you, when it creeps into your own life, you will be able to see how it can eventually affect. You can extrapolate. Doesn't mean you read the future, but you can extrapolate. If I'm buying a house out here and I see a four-lane highway and they're telling me I'm in a rural area, but I see what looks like the beginnings of driveways and lots of highways, I'm going to be able to extrapolate. If I can see this in other parts of the world because I've learned history and architecture and I learned things about epidemiology, I'm going to be able to extrapolate that they're planning actually something very different. Same thing when you're starting to kind of scratch your head and say things such as, wow, it seems like all my kids' friends sure are on a lot of medication. You can extrapolate it a little bit and then start looking. But the most important thing you need to do, again, is be your own anthropologist. So this is a program of kind of random alarm to say, let's regroup, take a breath, and get back to some simple basics. Be your own anthropologist. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you how sometimes even the most gifted people that we all have a tendency to pigeonhole and put give an idea of what we think that is, how even gifted children that seem to have a higher developmental ability in one area can actually have lots of stumbling blocks in others. We'll get to that on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. So let's talk a little bit about gifted children, which is an interesting word, the word gifted. There's some controversy on whether that's something that will be kept or whether it's a great thing to keep, because it does imply something. It gives us a visual of the gifted person and how we see them almost in a Hollywood manner. But it also will give you an idea to see how sometimes we used to have words like eccentric and words like quirky or unusual to describe people that tended to excel in certain areas or eggheads even. I mean, they're kind of negative terms about people that were too intelligent or too smart. And as children, sometimes it can be very frustrating because as a parent, sure, you want to see that your kid, you love that your kid, let's say, dances really great or knows how to read or can be potty trained early. We love that because it shows some good development. We don't have to worry about it not developing because we're hopeful that the generation that develops well will go on to be well-adjusted and very contributing adults, and they will better this world. This is what we really want and hope. I'm thankful and happy that we have learned so much about attention deficit disorder, dyslexia, even the things like there was a time where people didn't understand Down syndrome. There are places in the world right now where people will actually get. I've talked to many parents of Down syndrome with children with Down syndrome, who in their home country in rural areas, they would be ostracized as a family, as if somehow this was just associating with someone with a child with Down syndrome would be catching or would be problems. They still think of it as some kind of curse. I mean, it's really very primitive in a lot of cultures that you would not guess. But I've had this directly from the parents who came from those cultures and came here to the United States to raise their children and to become professionals and to go to school themselves. Okay. So here's an article written in 2017, just barely, not even a month ago, in February, almost a month ago. Six things you think you understand about gifted kids, but don't. So what I want you to hear in this too is not only about gifted children, but about your own child and about even things that people might consider delays or lags or problems or immaturities or even indications of, let's say, being on the autistic spectrum that actually occur within the child themselves. So the child themselves, imagine what you are. If you could see or hear things, you see things. A lot of you as parents do this. You see what's coming on down the road. If one of your children keeps behaving in a certain way or keeps associating with a certain group of people and you are helpless to do anything about it. Well, imagine if you have no frame of reference, because you could have been that child and you may not have memory of it. You have no frame of reference, but you have an ability and no ability to know that you have the ability. If you can follow me, you have no ability to know you have the ability because you can't compare yourself to other brains of 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. You're just you. So you don't understand how you fit into the world. And you have other parts of you that are 2 and 3 years just in the kind of fall right in that spectrum of what we consider normal in the milestones of development. So what we think we know about kids, here's 6 myths. Gifted kids, and I'm going to read them just as they're written. Number 1, gifted kids excel in school without any help from anyone. Well, of course, if you have some intellectual gifts, you should do well in school. However, oftentimes they don't, and not because they may not have the intelligence for it, because they simply just tune out. I've had children tell me, and I've had my own children tell me, who were in gifted programs a while back, they would, one, rather not be gifted, or not, they didn't say those words. They said, basically, I'd rather be like the kid who flunks out because they seem to have more fun. People leave them alone. They're not looked upon or put upon like, well, you should have done better. I expect more from you. And a lot of times the programs just give them more of the same and don't develop what they're thirsting and hungering for, which is their breadth and their width. So they may have additional homework, or they just don't find it very challenging, or they can see patterns already. So they may do well on tests, but they really don't bother with their homework assignments. Now, these are older children, right? Now, here's the other thing. They might be more interested in the more compassionate, the more helping someone else, or interested in observing what human behavior is doing. And they themselves can appear as if they themselves have a disability. And it is very possible for your own gifted child to have a learning disability. So that can be very confusing, and it wouldn't necessarily be caught by you or by an expert. So sometimes a disability can hide, as they say, in the giftedness as well. So what they're also purporting is that some gifted children actually need intervention themselves because they have an asynchronous development. Number 2, gifted children are happy and well adjusted. That is not true. And as this article starts off, gifted children are human, not superhuman. And that means that where they may excel in one thing, they are just that same age or younger in other things. So they may have emotional lability, as we talked about yesterday. They may have that overstimulation syndrome where they feel things and experience things like in burst of neurological activity that's overwhelming to their neurological system. They may be clumsy. They feel sometimes very deeply, so they may make big deals out of what everyone else thinks shouldn't be big deals, because after all, you're only 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. So it's not unusual for them to be teased or bullied because they're different. They have different interests. I walked in on a couple of kindergartners one time talking about neuroscience. This is shocking. Now, I'm interested, and I find it tender and sweet. At the same time, other 5 and 6-year-olds could not join in on the conversation. The other myth is that they grew up to be highly successful adults. I cannot tell you how many adult prodigies, before I ever even got into medicine, adult prodigies in music, art, math, were people that could hardly pay their rent, living on welfare, because they got burned out, they got overused, they got overstimulated, and they just couldn't get in anywhere. Or they were always a disappointment because, by the way, you're so gifted, how come you're failing? Rather than, and all they do is get the feeling that they're defective, that they're not living up to that, you know, because all a human really wants, they don't want to be a machine that somebody displays. They want to be human beings who are loved for them. A lot of people in eating disorders were gifted, eating disorder clinics who have tubes down their noses, are extremely bright. They were the gifted child. They were so far ahead of their time. They couldn't understand that. All they knew is they didn't fit. They weren't seen. They weren't heard. They weren't loved for who they felt they were. So that is a really important thing. Number 4, we'll get into more of this tomorrow. Gifted kids are really just hot. This is a myth. Hot housed kids pushed by their parents to learn early. And what this particular paragraph starts to tell us is that you can play all the music you want to your unborn child. You can give your child and help your child all you want through things. Yes, lots of stimulation is important for that growth. You don't know what your child's going to be. However, your child's brain is not going to be able to do any more than your child's brain can do at any time during its development. If their little fingers, as they say in this article, are not neurologically motor and eye coordination connected enough to tie their shoe, you can help them all you want. They could be the most brilliant person in the world, but they're not going to be able to tie their shoe any earlier than their body and their little fingers are going to be able to do it. Number 5, gifted kids think they are better than everyone else. This is the myth because they're gifted. No, I'm telling you, oftentimes they end up thinking they're worse than, less than, or they wish they didn't have this because they feel like they're just freak shows or little clowns we put on display. It's very, very hard because a lot of them are very sensitive. Number 6, gifted kids are easy to raise. And that's another big myth. No, because they often feel like a misfit. They often are seen by their peers as misfits. And not because they're these, you know, kids who aren't gregarious, but because in their conversation, in their words, you as an adult oftentimes can be chided by using big words as if you are arrogant or trying to show off. Even adults do this to other adults when really, to you, they're just normal words. So these are things we have to think about. Remember, there was a time where we didn't have these terms and these labels. We didn't know what they were collectively. But now sometimes we pigeonhole too much. So what I want to do, we're just going to explode this like a little can that you take the top off and a bunch of worms pop out. But once we do, and we take the pressure cooker off these concepts, we can go back and say, okay, let's all take a breath. Let's be anthropologists in our own home. Let's look at the simple, back to the basics. We will talk about this again tomorrow. I am your host. Until then, God bless you. Dr. Michelle, Dr. Michelle Live.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.